The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. The next half hour, I'll be reading articles principally from the Harvard Health Letter. This is the Harvard Health Letter of December 2024. And the first article is entitled, Who's Missing from Your Healthcare Team? You might benefit from working with a physical therapist, a dietitian, or another expert. You're working hard to stay healthy, and you have a team to advise you, like a primary care doctor, a dentist, and a specialist or two. But sometimes it's easy to overlook other experts who can enhance your ability to stay healthy, strong, and independent. The perfect example is turning to a physical therapist if you have a new diagnosis of osteoporosis. Certain exercises can increase your risk of fractures, so it would be helpful to learn which ones are safe for you and how to do them properly, says Dr. Suzanne Salomon, Associate Chief of Gerontology at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Here is how to round out your healthcare team. Determine your needs. Think about weak spots in your health regimen or daily routine. Is your diet providing the right nutrients and calories? Are you exercising enough? Do you find certain activities more challenging, like reaching up for a glass from the cabinet or gripping a steering wheel? There is an expert for that. You might also check in with your doctor and ask which type of experts he or she would recommend for you. If not your doctor, seek a free evaluation from a social worker at the local senior center or area agency on aging, or, if it's in the budget, $75 to $250 per hour, hire someone to do an assessment, a specialist called an aging life care professional. You can find one through the Aging Life Care Association at www.aginglifecare.org. That's AGINGLIFECARE. Many types of professionals can support your health needs. Here are some examples. One is an occupational therapist. An OT is a licensed medical professional who can help you adapt or modify activities that have become challenging. For example, if you're experiencing hand pain related to carpal tunnel syndrome, we'll focus on reducing pain, improving your grip strength, and adapting tasks you're having difficulty with, like typing, chopping vegetables, or gripping a tool. We can also address challenges related to fatigue, brain fog, and chronic pain, says Maria Cole, an occupational therapist at Harvard-affiliated Spalding Regional Hospital. A certified driving rehabilitation specialist. This is an OT with additional training to evaluate how your health weaknesses are affecting your driving. The specialist's goal is to keep you behind the wheel. What are your specific needs? Where do you want to go? Who do you want to take with you? We can determine if you need adaptive equipment like hand controls, left foot accelerators, or mirrors, and we can recommend the best type of vehicle to use with the right features for your needs, says Jocelyn Davin, an occupational therapist at Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. Another is a certified personal trainer. Think of a personal trainer as a fitness coach. Use a trainer to get over the hump of inactivity, for guidance on getting started in a gym, or for elevating your current routine, says VJ Daryanani, a certified personal trainer and physical therapist at Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. A personal trainer can help you improve flexibility, strength, cardiovascular endurance, and functional fitness. Reach your goals, stay motivated, and change your behavior to work fitness into your lifestyle. Then there's a physical therapist. A physical therapist takes a deeper dive into your health than a personal trainer. The physical therapist has medical training and must be licensed. A physical therapist will use tests and assessments to give you a baseline of where you are physically. and design an exercise program based on your challenges, like chronic pain, neuropathy, or arthritis. You'll learn how to work with your limitations, says Jim Zakazuski, a physical therapist with Massachusetts General Brigham Sports Medicine. Then there is a dietitian. Want a healthier diet or one that supports a health condition, like heart disease, high blood pressure, or diabetes, or a goal like weight loss? A dietitian is a licensed medical professional who can come up with an eating plan tailored to your health needs. Finally, there's a personal chef. If it's physically hard for you to cook or you don't have time to prepare healthy meals, a personal chef can help. The chef can shop for ingredients for a week's worth of meals, cook the food in your home, and then freeze it in portions. Chefs can also come up with healthy menus, although they don't have the same expertise as a dietitian. If a personal chef seems too fancy or expensive, there also are chefs who deliver cooked, frozen meals that you can rewarm later. Before seeking one of those experts, consider your budget. Some services are covered by insurance if they're medically necessary, like occupational therapy, dietitian services, and physical therapy if you suffered an injury or you have a chronic condition like arthritis. Otherwise, assessments and visits with experts are usually paid out of pocket. You can expect to pay $100 to $200 per session, depending on where you live. A driving assessment is much more, about $600 and up. Hiring a personal chef is also pricey, though costs vary depending on where you live. For example, a personal chef in Tampa, Florida, might charge $300 to shop for and cook a week's worth of meals, in addition to the cost of groceries. Adding anyone to your healthcare team can be expensive, but maybe you just need one or two sessions a year with the expert to stay on track, Dr. Salomon says. It's worth it to ask the expert about strategies that can make the cost as affordable as possible. Now, here's an article from the Doctor by Dr. Anthony Komaroff, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. And the question is, can we measure how rapidly our bodies are aging? We've all seen it. Some people appear either much younger or much older than their age. And we've probably all looked in the mirror, seen how old we looked on the outside, and then wondered how old we were on the inside. Is there a way of actually measuring how rapidly our bodies are aging? If so, does this measurement tell us something important, like how likely we are to develop age-related diseases like heart disease, cancer, and dementia? To some extent, yes. Over the last 30 years, scientific advances have begun to allow measurement of our biologic age. One well-established technique is to measure the length of telomeres, the ends of the chromosomes inside every cell. People whose cells have shorter telomeres are more prone to age-related diseases. Another well-established technique is to measure something called the epigenetic clock, an assessment of which genes are turned on or off. In the August 2024 journal Nature Medicine, a study was published reporting a new approach made possible by a remarkable scientific advance in an area known as proteomics, the ability to measure the level of thousands of proteins in a small sample of blood. An international team measured the level of 3,000 proteins in the blood of 45,000 people in the United Kingdom. They found the levels of about 200 of the proteins predicted chronologic age, and that people whose proteomic age was greater than their actual age were more likely to develop age-related declines in physical and cognitive function, as well as age-related diseases. They even found markers of the aging of specific body organs. Finally, they showed that the proteomic clock they had developed from studying people living in the United Kingdom also predicted biologic aging in large numbers of people in China and Finland. Now that we have a way of measuring how rapidly our bodies are aging, will this knowledge help us to slow down the process? It's possible that the protein pattern unearthed by this study will provide clues that lead to anti-aging treatments. Already, biotechnology companies are working on this. It's also possible that relatively young people who are told they are aging more rapidly than others may be convinced to make lifestyle changes that slow the aging process. Whether either of these benefits will flow from this new knowledge remains to be seen. What is clear is that we are entering a new age in which tests like this and technologies that continuously measure body functions can give us information we never had before. Now here's an article from the Harvard Health Letter entitled, How the Stigma of Migraine Might Hurt Your Health. Disease-related stigma appears to worsen migraine disability and more. Here's what you can do about it. The pounding, throbbing intensity of migraine headaches comes with many burdens, including extreme pain, reduced ability to function, missed work days, and less time spent with family and friends. To make matters worse, the condition can carry a stigma that unfairly marks individuals with migraine. New evidence from Harvard and other researchers suggests that this stigma might be tied to increased disability and reduced quality of life for people struggling with this debilitating disease. What is migraine stigma? Migraine stigma has two forms. One is external, coming from other people. The person with migraine is often discredited or devalued. Those around them think it's just a headache, and that the person is pretending to have the disability to get out of doing an activity, says Dr. Sait Ashina, a neurologist who specializes in headache treatment at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. In fact, there are underlying abnormalities in the brain that cause migraine. The other form of migraine stigma is internal. It's guilt or fear. People worry about what will happen if they say they have migraine. I had one patient who was concerned about sharing it in a job interview, Dr. Ashina says. Indeed, some people internalize the stigma they experience from others and find themselves wondering if their illness is real. Dr. Ashina and his colleagues recently investigated the effects of external stigma on people with migraine. They evaluated the questionnaire responses of more than 59,000 people with migraine, average age 41, assessing how frequently participants had headaches, how migraine affected their ability to function, and their quality of life, how often participants felt their disease was minimized by others, and how often they felt their burden was viewed as being used for personal gain. More than a third of participants said they experienced stigma often or very often. And compared with those who said they never experienced migraine stigma, those who said they did had a lower quality of life, more disability, and more burden in between migraine attacks. Stigma worsened the effect of migraine, independent of how many days a month they had headaches, Dr. Ashina says. The study, published February 13, 2024, in Neurology, should be interpreted with caution. We'll need more evidence to confirm its findings. But these results are consistent with studies of other diseases that have linked disease-related stigma to worsened health outcomes. Tackling migraine stigma requires a multi-pronged approach. First, you should take care of yourself. Talk to a psychologist or join a migraine support group. It gives you a way to share your pain and learn strategies to cope with stigma, Dr. Ashina says. He also recommends practicing breathing exercises, yoga, or mindfulness meditation to help reduce stigma-related stress. Plus, stress management can ease migraine pain and prevent attacks. There's a lack of understanding about migraine headaches, likely because it's a disability other people at times can't see, unlike a broken arm, for example, Dr. Ashina says. He suggests sharing information about the condition with loved ones. Consider referring them to this article. You should also start a conversation at work. Talk to your boss or HR department if you need job support. People with migraine are sometimes protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act, which might entitle them to medical leave, though it might be unpaid, and other accommodations. For example, if you're sensitive to light, ask for a screen protector on your computer. If you're sensitive to noise, ask for a quiet room to work in, Dr. Ishina says. Consider working with your doctor to spell out needed accommodations. For more information about that, check out the National Headache Foundation at https://headaches.org/resources/disability-benefits. The next very useful article is called "Can a Knee Brace Ease Arthritis Pain?" Knee braces might be able to provide stability, control swelling, and help reduce pain and pressure on the knee. Knee braces might be known best for their benefits after knee surgery. They align and stabilize the joint. But braces might also help you cope with pain, swelling, and stiffness of knee osteoarthritis, the wearing away of the cartilage that cushions the end of the bone where they meet in the joint. While evidence about how well braces ease arthritis symptoms is mixed, bracing is a non-invasive strategy that won't hurt to try. The key is to understand your goals for relief. Here are three brace types to consider. A common knee brace is called a sleeve. It's a compressive, stretchy fabric or neoprene tube that you pull over or wrap around your knee. The sleeve extends about 6 inches above and below the knee. The snug fit offers many potential benefits: warmth, which loosens up a stiff knee, a sense of support, which might make you feel more confident, although it doesn't provide structural support, reduced swelling, which eases pain, and possibly a way to prevent flare-ups. Compressing the knee helps keep fluid from coming into it. The less swelling, the less your knee will hurt, and the better your knee will move. Reduced swelling also allows muscles that support the knee, such as the quadriceps, to do their jobs better, so the knee is supported as you walk, squat, or go up and down stairs, says Jim Zakazewski, a physical therapist and athletic trainer with Massachusetts General Brigham Sports Medicine. The next is an unloader brace. Another type of brace used for knee osteoarthritis is an unloader brace. It's a long frame that fits on top of your leg, from your mid-thigh to your mid-shin. It consists of a rigid metal or plastic strut, bars, that go on either side of your leg, and horizontal straps to keep the brace in place. The struts hinge at your knee so you can bend it. The brace is for people whose arthritis is worse on one side of the knee than the other. The struts are adjusted to apply force that shifts pressure away from the bad or painful side of the knee, which minimizes pain and swelling. The brace also provides some side-to-side stability for the knee, but the brace can be a little bulky and uncomfortable. Zakazewski recommends wearing a light knee sleeve underneath it to prevent skin irritation and provide joint compression. Then there are patella tracking braces. This type of brace combines the approach of both knee sleeves and unloader braces to reduce knee pain, swelling, and pressure. The kneecap sometimes comes off its track, a groove in the thigh bone that allows the kneecap to move up and down. Misalignment is painful. A patella tracking brace is worn like a knee sleeve. It also has straps or pads that use gentle force to keep the kneecap properly aligned and on track as the knee bends and straightened. This stabilizes the kneecap and redistributes pressure more evenly. Zach Azuski says this brace is especially helpful for going up and down stairs or squatting. Costs for knee braces vary. A knee sleeve can be bought for about $15 to $75 online or in drugstores. It's not usually covered by insurance. Health insurance might cover some or all of the costs of an unloader brace or a patella tracking brace if it's prescribed by a doctor and custom fit by a durable medical equipment dealer that accepts your insurance. Or you can pay out of pocket for these braces. About $100 to $300 for an unloader brace and $35 to $100 for a patella tracking brace. If you're interested in using a knee brace, you can try a knee sleeve on your own. See if it makes a difference. If it seems to help, ask your doctor if an unloader or a patella tracking brace might work better. You might need to work with a physical therapist to get used to being active while wearing the bulkier brace. Zach Azuski says you can wear a brace during any activity that places pressure on your knee, like doing house or yard work, going up and down stairs, shopping, exercising, or just going about your daily activities. The brace won't heal your knee arthritis, and it's not guaranteed to relieve your symptoms, but for some people it's an important tool for living with chronic knee pain. And now here's another useful article from the Harvard Medical Letter of December, the Harvard Health Letter of December 2024, and it's called Digestive Health Changes, When to Seek Medical Care. Here's how to figure out if a new stomach or gut issue is more than just temporary. It's been an eventful year in the world, and it seems like it's been a bumpy ride for your gastrointestinal tract too, with bouts of heartburn, diarrhea, or constipation. This is a good time to consider whether you've been experiencing temporary symptoms or signs of something more serious or chronic. The first step in understanding gastrointestinal distress is putting a name to the problem. The first condition is heartburn. The fiery feeling in your chest is usually caused by stomach acid that leaks upward into the esophagus. It occurs when the ring of muscles that normally stop leakage temporarily loosen or aren't working well. Heartburn might also cause a sore throat, a cough, or a metallic taste after meals. Then there's constipation. If you're not having a bowel movement three times a week, that's considered constipation. Or if your stool is hard or lumpy and you strain to get it out, you have the feeling you aren't evacuating completely. That's also constipation. Then diarrhea is watery, unformed stool. It doesn't feel great as it's brewing in your gut, and it's often uncomfortable to pass it. The digestive tract is a sophisticated yet sensitive system that can be disrupted anywhere along the route, from the mouth to the anus, and it doesn't take much to cause temporary discomfort. Stress can slow digestion and cause constipation. Increased acid production and trigger heartburn, or speed digestion and send you running to the bathroom with diarrhea. The digestive tract is the second nervous system. There are many nerve endings going to all parts of it, including the stomach, small intestine, and large intestine. Stress might result in the brain telling the tracts how to react, even when there might not be anything wrong structurally, says Dr. Alexander Goldowski, a gastroenterologist at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Other possible causes of occasional gastrointestinal problems include your diet, weight gain, an infection, or a medication side effect. When to call your doctor. You should call your doctor immediately if your symptoms include bloody stools, fever, loss of bowel control, severe pain, or severe dehydration. If you don't have those symptoms, but you do have heartburn, diarrhea, or constipation that isn't going away after a week or two of home remedies, it's time to see your doctor. We don't want to miss colon cancer or inflammatory bowel disease, Dr. Goldowski says. These are unlikely causes of such symptoms, but we need to rule them out. Your physician will also rule out other disorders that can cause gastrointestinal problems, like low thyroid function, gut changes that affect how fast food moves through the digestive tract, and medication side effects that might be causing trouble. The encouraging news is that there's usually a way to treat the problem, including specialized diets, physical therapy, or medications. Don't give up. We can get you feeling better, Dr. Goldowski says. My goal is for you to be able to control or eliminate your symptoms so you can function well and have a better quality of life. For example, Dr. Goldowski recommends using a fiber supplement for diarrhea, since fiber helps stool form properly. It's also essential to stay hydrated to replace fluids you're losing through diarrhea. Additionally, it's a good idea to keep track of foods that might be triggering diarrhea. Common culprits include dairy foods, foods that contain gluten, artificial sweeteners, or caffeine, fried, fatty, spicy, or sugary foods, and foods with natural sugars that are difficult for some people to digest, like wheat, rye, onions, garlic, legumes, honey, pistachios, cashews, asparagus, artichokes, and sun-dried tomatoes. It might also help to take an anti-diarrheal medication like Imodium or loperamide. Don't overdo it, though, because that can cause constipation. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Yunkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.